When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Listening to Flop Culture, a podcast where we mainly talk about flops, unsurprisingly, but we also talk bops, hot goss, and pop culture at large with me, Fionnuala J. This week, we're talking about a rom-com, and it's a great convo, so I think we should just get straight into it. Nothing screams the 2010s more than a romantic comedy starring Anna Faris and Chris Evans about the idea of someone's body count, aka the number of people a person has slept with. What's Your Number has a stacked cast and some jokes to boot, but it didn't quite land with audiences back in 2011. Joining me to investigate why is TV critic Robin Murphy. Enjoy. Robin Murphy, thank you so much for coming to do Flop Culture.
I am delighted to be here. Thank you for having me.
Talk to me about your pick and why you picked it.
Yes, so this film, which I have picked, is kind of what I think of as my dirty little secret in terms of with work, the work that I do. And then also whenever you're talking about college with people and you're like, oh, what did you do in college? And I tell them that I did film studies. The inevitable question is, what's your favorite film? And this is my all-time favorite film.
Your all-time favorite film.
All-time favorite film. And I'm so ashamed of it that people will ask me and I'll say something cooler, The Departed or La La Land or Whiplash, which are all films that I do genuinely love.
What's the one where Morgan Freeman's in prison?
Shawshank Redemption.
That one. Why did I forget that? But yeah, you're saying that one.
Something of a bit more higher standard. But I was out with some friends a while ago and the kind of topic came up and I have two really, really good friends and something came up. I was like, what's Robin's favourite film? And my friend said, La La Land. And then my really close friend who was beside me directly just whispered, what's Your Number? Yes. So I have chosen the 2011 romantic comedy, What's Your Number, as my flop.
What is What's Your Number about for anyone who has yet to watch?
Yes. For anyone unfamiliar, and we probably end up spoiling it in the talk. So
absolutely. No.
You're going to get it spoiled for you.
Yeah.
But it is a romantic comedy that is based on a book by, I have her name here, Karen Bosnick, called 20 Times a Lady, which I think is a better title. It's a better title than What's Your Number. But it basically follows Ali, who's played by Anna Faris, who is a woman in her kind of early mid-30s, going through life. She's working in marketing in Boston and her younger sister is getting married, which kind of she feels a little bit usurped about that. And then she gets fired from her job And on her way from being fired, she finds this kind of old magazine in her stuff and finds an article that says that women in America who have slept with 20 or more people can't find a husband. So she starts to jot down all the people that she slept with, realizes she's on 19, and then at her sister's bachelorette party that night, vows that the next person she's going to sleep with is her husband, only to get blackout drunk and sleep with her boss that very same night.
Her ex-boss, because she'd just been fired.
Who she's just been fired from.
Incredibly by Joel McHale, who plays dirtbags so well. Even he has like a really tiny, for anyone who hasn't seen The Bear, he's a really tiny part in The Bear as like your man's boss in the Michelin star, like Gordon Ramsay-esque, but not even like in a brute shouting way, in just a, you are pathetic.
Such
I fucking hate, like psychological, I love Joel McHale. Anyway, so she gets with Joel McHale.
So she gets with Joel McHale
that night, understandably,
and now she's at 20.
Okay.
So she vows that the next person that she sleeps with, or she has vowed that she would not sleep with anybody else, but now she's at 20 and she's had a problem. So in comes Chris Evans, the gorgeous, gorgeous Chris Evans, who plays her neighbour, who comes from a family of cops. So he's like really good at tracking people down. He like says to her that he has like dirt on everyone in their building.
Says it very nonchalantly. I had this in my notes. I was like, is this movie, like, is there some kind of Google spawn in this? Because at one point he says that he's like, I've Google alerts on everyone, and then mentions something else about like, mentions some other Google product really unnaturally. And she's like, class, okay. Yeah. I was like, what the fuck am I watching?
They do have that whole montage where she is Googling herself. So she tries herself, when she reaches 20, she tries herself to track down all of her ex-boyfriends, because she's inspired in part by the fact she's ran into who she terms disgusting Donald, who's one of her
played
exes.
Played by Chris Pratt.
We will come back to that. He was her husband at the time. But so she meets up with disgusting Donald, who is now like 2011 Chris Pratt. He's training for Guardians of the Galaxy. He's lost the weight. He's looking well. So inspired by the fact that he has changed since their time together, she tries to find and track down her previous partners, discovers that's a lot harder than she thought it was, so then drafts in Colin, who is Chris Evans' character, to track down all of her ex-boyfriends, because she's determined that like one of them is meant to be her husband.
One of them is the right one.
And one of them is Mr. Right.
We meet these various ex-boyfriends or like ex-exploits throughout.
Which is like a stellar cast list, because even like, as you say, Joel McHale, I have them
all. I was really impressed. Run them down.
Like, Joel McHale and Chris Pratt, who we've talked about. Then we also have Martin Freeman, Anthony Mackie, Andy Samberg, Aziz Ansari plays the guy on the phone at the end. Zachary Quinto is the like first ex. And then...
Oh, Rick. Jesus. Everyone knows a Rick who's like...
Everybody has a Rick.
I care about the environment. But then just, like you could see him cycling off and he just will never text you back.
Never text you back. Loves his bike again
more than he loves any woman, probably.
And the other one is Dave Annabelle, who's the kind of main kind of guy who she's trying to get with. He comes from a rich family. They were like childhood sweethearts. But Dave Annabelle mightn't be familiar, but to anybody who has watched Brothers and Sisters, he was Justin Brothers and Sisters, which is how I know him.
Thank you, because that was wrecking. I need to rewatch Brothers and Sisters. I haven't watched it in so long and I loved it. I was like, there's something... Oh, that's
I know that face.
That satisfied me, but now it's also irritated me that I didn't remember. I really need to go back and rewatch Brothers and Sisters.
So it's a stellar crew of exes she's got going on.
When Anthony Mackie turns up, like, they probably have the funniest interaction, because the whole thing is like, I wouldn't be familiar with, I know he's like the superhero stuff. I haven't seen a lot of the superhero stuff that he's in, bar obviously the obvious ensemble stuff. He's funny. Like, he can do comedy
he's
in a way that
really
I wasn't
good
really
comedic
expecting.
Timing.
Yeah.
And even as I was rewatching it last night, his kind of proposition to her, so again, spoiling it, sorry. But so he's one of her exes. He's on track to be a senator, but he's also gay. And he has this thing where he says that America is ready for a black president, but they're not ready for a black gay president. So he wants her to be like his beard so that they would get married and kind of rise up the political sphere in the US. And I was like, honestly, if he offered me that, I'd be like, yeah.
I can't believe you're turning this down.
You were going to be like a senator's wife, maybe even the first lady, but you were like, nah. Like, I'd do it.
She just wants to stay making her mad sculptures.
She just wants to stay with those sculptures.
Her mad sculptures. Disgusting Donald. Maybe we should revisit that actually before we even get into Chris Evans. Like, it's a bit of a weird one, because obviously it's like, I would say it's like borderline fatphobic, the way it's kind of, it's fatphobic without saying it's fatphobic, because obviously it's like the implication is they were together, they both looked very different, like were obsessed with eating, but like never, like would never cook themselves, would like eat out loads. She meets him then when they're like, she's with her sister wedding cake tasting, and she meets Disgusting Donald, and he's actually also getting married. So she lies about getting married and stuff.
Yeah.
When I just think about, like, when you consider that there are two significant Chrises in this movie, and as you mentioned, Anna Faris was regrettably married to Chris Pratt at this time.
Yeah.
How different would the world be if she had gotten married to Chris Evans instead? Do you know what I mean? I kind of think COVID wouldn't have happened. Like, I think I think a lot of things in life would have been incredibly better.
Incredibly better. Like, nature would be healing.
I don't think, like, COVID. Climate change, I think, would be kind of grand. Yeah. Like, I just...
That hole in the ozone layer, sewn up with that relationship. Yeah. That's it.
Anna Faris is the star of this movie in every sense of the word star. Like, she is... I don't know, I see people having conversations around, like, who's the rom-com queen on social media. And, it's, you know, the obvious names come up. So it's like Julia Roberts, Meg Ryan, they're kind of the two main ones. Other names come up. I'm sure you're thinking of some as I'm saying it. But, like, Anna Faris had a good run up to this. You're, like, talking House Bunny. There'd been a couple of other things. Then she does this. And, like, look, it's not a total flop in the sense that it did make back some money. I think it ended up making, like...
It made... So it had a $20 million budget. And then, like, globally, so between the US and kind of everywhere else, made 30.4. So, like, it made, like... It's budget and a half. Like, it made like 150% or whatever of a return, which isn't bad, and which is good for a rom-com in 2011 as well, which, like, one of the reasons when we get into it a little bit later, but like why I think it flopped. It's like, I have one of a few reasons. One of them, I think, is around the time that it came out, just in terms of what the cinema landscape in the 2011, 2012.
Well, I was going to say, but let's talk about it now, because, like, when you look at the movies, that the top ranking movies that did well, it's like Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, Transformers, Dark the Moon, Pirates of the Caribbean, on Stranger Tides, Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn Part 1, Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, Kung Fu Panda 2, Fast 5, Hangover Part 2, The Smurfs, and Cars 2. 9 out of 10 of them are sequels. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's all like franchises. And obviously Smurfs would go on to have its sequels or whatever.
Yeah.
But this really was a point of, like, real difficulty for rom-coms, I think. I think this is where it's... So you're coming out of the 90s and the noughties, and then you're in this early teenies, probably for the majority of the teens as well, where I just think we never really stuck the landing in terms of rom-coms. And, like, I did enjoy this. I'm not sure I enjoyed it as much as you. but I think it's because tonally I think it has issues. I think it thinks it's one thing and it doesn't really commit to it. I think because it was, like, R-rated, the humor's there. But there's a part of me that just thinks if it went, like, full hog and kind of nearly winked at itself, it would have succeeded a bit more. But because it kind of trips up on the rom side of the com, I think. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I do. I do think it strikes a nice balance. And I wonder if it was, like, when I first watched it, which is why I kind of fell heavily for it, because it came at the height of my, like, Chris Evans phase. But, like, in terms of, when it came out, I think there's a lot that would have happened socially or even, like, cinematically or within film at that time that probably didn't help it succeed. Like, I had taken I took a rom-com and chick flicks class in my master's degree because these were the things we did.
Why the fuck did I bother doing journalism? Jesus Christ.
It was such a good class. But one of the things we looked at was this, like, post-recession or, like, the recession era rom-com, right?
Mm.
So you've moved away from the, like, consumerism of the noughties.
27 Dresses.
The 27... How many, like, bridal movies came out in the noughties? Like, 27 Dresses,
Maid of Honor,
Wars, Maid of Honor. Do you know,
Fucking love Maid of Honor.
And even, like, Confessions of a Shopaholic. All kind of geared towards you, like, spending money and you buying money. And now the economy is crashed. And nobody wants to do that, or nobody wants to see that on screen. Like, if you are paying to go to the cinema, you're paying for, like, an escapist experience of, like, to get away from what you're thinking about at home. So it's like, you don't want to see a beautiful person spending, like, hundreds of thousands of dollars on like shopping sprees because you can't do that. So it's not aspirational.
Or something. Yeah,
or like
dates
like that. So there was a switch in the rom-coms then once the recession came around where like I wrote an essay comparing No Strings Attached, Friends with Benefits and Friends with Kids, where they seemed to make this shift into the focus was on your immediate circle. So as you say, you're not spending money on dates. You're not going out to bars to try and pick up people. You're looking within yourself and within your own kind of inner circle because your friends already like you. They're already interested in you. And why don't you just like make that jump to kind of get with them and pursue them as a romantic aspect?
Which is exactly what Anna Faris's character is doing.
You know, she's looking into herself. She's spending all this money chasing down all her exes. And then she's like, well, just go with the friend instead.
Yeah.
Which is like the way that it switches around. But I think in terms of like the rom-com has really gone through a lot in kind of recent times in terms of it kind of made that shift from, as you say, when you had talking about the rom-com stars, you know, in the kind of 80s when they were really big and then the 90s into the noughties when we got the kind of most of them, their like heaviest concentration. It was like rom-coms were star vehicles. Like they were like, you know, the way that you became a star. And if you landed a lead in a romantic comedy, like you were set, you know, and you kind of kept getting these recurrences. It's kind of how like the McConaughey's and the Anne Hathaway's and the Kate Hudson's got kind of pulled into that genre where, you know, they were really bankable. So they kept making rom-coms with these stars because people were spending the money and they were going to see it. And I think around 2011, if you look at what was going on, is like even that list you mentioned, it's all sequels, but it's also you've the second to last and the last Breaking Dawn, Harry Potter, and then you have the kind of 2012 is coming around and you're starting the Hunger Games franchise, you're starting all the superhero narratives, and you're also starting like Divergent. All those young adult adaptations and superheroes are getting really, really big at this time. So instead of being like a star vehicle to like bring on the next person, like rom-coms are kind of looked at as like something that you did, I feel anyway, something that you did if you couldn't get a superhero movie. Like if you weren't getting the superhero jobs or you weren't getting cast in a young adult adaptation, like you did your rom-coms.
Yeah.
And they weren't kind of viewed with the same kind of, I always think that like rom-coms have probably been a bit looked down upon within the scope of film anyways, like kind of as if, oh, anyone can do it, which I really disagree with. I think it takes a very special person to be able to do a good rom-com.
Yeah, you, and we will talk about it later. You clearly can't, because we've had like a glut of really bad ones. And like you look at streamers who have all this money, like Netflix, and they have yet to do, maybe you'll argue with me on this, but like they've yet to do a really good one. And again, they draft in the people who are viewed as bankable in inverted commas. And they just something, there's a lack there, you know what I mean? So, no, I think there has always been this kind of sneery look at them for sure, which has been unfair. But again, why is that? It's because they're marketed towards women. It's because the primary audience, women. Yeah. And because why? People hate women. That's why.
Yeah. The crux of it, people hate women.
It can always be tied back to that. Always.
But I am going to argue with you on the Netflix point.
Oh, okay. Oh. Well, we'll come back to
it.
As I mentioned, like Anna Faris had kind of come off on a good run of stuff, but then 2011, she was in this. She was in Take Me Home Tonight, which I've never seen. But is I thought it was supposed to be okay, but just kind of never went anywhere. But when I was looking at it, I think the reviews were very mixed, and it was a much bigger flop than What's Her Number. She was also in Alvin and the Chipmunks, Chipwrecked, which is the third movie Alvin and the Chipmunks franchise. Yeah. And that made over $340 million, which would make you want to do things to yourself. You look at Chris then that year, again, he's obviously coming off of, like, he's been busy, but
he's been booked and busy, but he hadn't, I think until this point, he hasn't had a lot of hits.
No, so like, Not Another Teen Movie, again, like funny in that, funny, but again, lacking in the rom sense there, but he shows he can still do funny in What's Your Number. But in terms of other stuff he did this year, so he's in an indie movie called Puncture. I think it might be called Injustice over here.
Yeah.
And this is like very gritty, like very meat. This
very
is an
dark
actor's movie.
Yeah.
It's about Michael David Weiss, an American lawyer who began a class action lawsuit against hospital syringe distributors in America, and they'll protecting nurses from accidental syringe sticks.
Yeah.
And another movie, not sure if you've ever heard of it, Captain America.
That little known indie.
Tiny superhero movie.
To get it off the ground, you know, the financing kept falling through. But one of the reasons why considering why it might have flopped, is I thought there had been an element perhaps that year, in the year that it came out, of like Chris Evans fatigue, right? Because as I said, like, he's been kind of booked busy. He's been steadily going along. Like, I was looking at his IMDb last night. Like, he has like a movie every year, if not at least one movie every year since like 2001, right? So we're kind of 10 years kind of into his career now. And as you say, he had those films. And then he also had Scott Pilgrim versus the World in 2010.
Oh, yes.
And
yeah,
he had another kind of ensemble action piece in The Losers in 2010. And then also in 2011, he was going into that kind of press tour cycle for the Avengers movie. Mm. So he was kind of everywhere in 2011. And I thought one of the reasons why maybe it wouldn't hit is like, were people a bit fed up with him at that stage?
Maybe. I was just going to ask, did that Captain America kick off like that for that new phase of it being like the MCU, or when did that start?
So the first phase of the MCU started technically with the Incredible Hulk in 2008, and then Iron Man was also 2008, and Iron Man is really seen as the kind of first one.
Yeah.
But then you had Iron Man in 2008, you had Iron Man 2 in 2010, and then in 2011 you had Thor and Captain America, and the Captain America movie, like the end of that and the end of Thor, led directly into the events like of the Avengers.
Yeah.
I really did like kick it off. And like Captain America is the like the leader of the Avengers.
Yeah.
The Iron Man fans are screaming at me. I can hear it. But like,
oh my God, they're going to be so mad at you.
So mad.
Captain America is what really, in my brain, like, okay, this is, because I think even then, like incredible, like critic wise, even I think the Incredible Hulk was like grand, yeah. Same with Iron Man, whatever. And then Captain America was like, oh no, actually, maybe they're onto something here. And like, yeah. I think it was also that anchor was Chris Evans, because you had like, it's been a while since I've seen that movie, but like the gist of it, like there's a lot of comedy moments there, and then there's obviously the romance angle.
Yeah,
he does it all. He really does it all. Well, like
pretty
he's,
well,
and he's very good in this as like, and he's also just like, stupidly hot. It's every time I had to look at that, whatever the anatomical the V that men have there.
Yeah,
that needs to be censored. Like every time he's in the door frame, I was like, oh, it's just so distracting.
Literally,
like,
my first note is like his introduction, his opening scene. I'm like, what a fucking scene. Oh. He emerges like from his apartment, eating an apple, holding like a tea towel in front of there, like V-lines fully on display. Like, it's incredibly sexy.
They need new towels in that apartment because they're threadbare. They are threadbare. That's all I'm saying.
It's a great introduction scene. And he's just so charismatic.
He is very charismatic.
And I think that's the thing about Chris Evans in general, like as an actor, is it's why all those kind of sound bites or bits from like him in interviews end up going viral. Like, you know, the one from the Lightyear press tour?
Yeah.
When he asked the guy, he was like, oh, do you like the mustache? Be honest. It's like, yeah, so sexy. But he is incredibly charismatic as an actor, and he plays this rom-com lead incredibly well, I think.
Do you know why I also think it works? Because I just don't think he's taken it. I think he's not taking it too seriously, but I also think he's taking it seriously enough in a way that like some actors probably don't. You know what I mean? Like pre-McConaissance, like Matthew McConaughey, I actually do think he took all of those roles like incredibly
really seriously.
You know what I mean? Like it wasn't like, it's a trick in some ways, but you know what I mean? In the way that we were talking about previously, that other actors would have been like, I wouldn't touch this with a barge pole, whatever. Yeah. Matthew was like, I'm turning up to work. I'm meeting the ghosts of my girlfriends, or Kate Hudson wants to dump me in 10 days. Fair enough. Blah, blah, blah. Like, he committed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think Chris Evans has that same quality about him. I think he's like really unable to not commit to something, and not in like a Jeremy Strong like method way, but in just that he's like, I'm going to turn up and do the best job that I can. And I think that's it's palpable with the chemistry he has with Anna. Like they are really believable. Like for me, the two of them are the strongest things about this movie for sure. Yeah.
They have really, really good chemistry, in that they're really believable as being, like, you can totally see them in another kind of life as just being these neighbors who become friends who end up falling for each other, because they're both kind of ridiculously attractive people, and they're funny, and like, you know, they have incredible bodies. That like strip horse scene in the garden when they're playing basketball, you're just like, Jesus Christ, these are two like incredibly good looking people, incredibly hot people, but they are really, really believable as romantic interests, I think. And I think it's kind of a bit clear, like, as you say, you get the sense that he committed to it in terms of you can tell he's having fun with it. You can tell that he's like enjoying being there, and but like he is taking it seriously. He's not just kind of looking at it as you say, just like another job. He just turns up, he gets his check, and he goes. And I think it's because like they knew each other before filming, and they would have been friends kind of before filming. And I think that really plays like a big part of it, where you can tell that these are two people that like each other. They didn't just meet like that morning of like beginning of shooting and been like, okay, well, I guess we're supposed to be in love with each other now. Like they did have a kind of pre-existing relationship, which helps. But also, even if there wasn't that relationship, like it, as we say, it takes a very special person to be able to do a rom-com, because you do have to convincingly be like, even if you've never met this person, I really like
them. I'm in love with you.
The chemistry is like such, obviously, when you have a romance plot, it's such a huge part of it. But it really just does make or break the romantic comedy. And it is, as you say, probably the best part of this is that they clearly get on so well together and that they're having fun, and you can tell, and it makes you kind of want to follow along with them.
How do you think it holds up now? Because I suppose just going back to like, why I don't think it 100% sticks the landing is that obviously it's around this like very antiquated thing of like body counts, like how many people you've slept with and how that's like an indication of who you are. And I know there's some couple, like they have friend or she has friends in the movie that it like basically don't believe it. It's Eliza Coop, I think, is the main one. The other blonde gal who slept with like 12 or 13 people or something. And she's like, I'm a whore as well, blah, 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 whatever. Yeah. Like, I don't want to get too like, because obviously it's a movie and you have to like extend your or suspend your belief disbelief even.
Yeah.
But there is just a part of me that just feels like it would have been a little bit more enjoyable and a little bit less like icky had it not been her being like, had it not just been a piss take. You know what I mean? Like it's, that part of it is still very like, it's very late noughties, early teenies, you know, that kind of way. Like, it has that bang off it.
It's not, obviously it's not very progressive. And I think it's easy to just be like, oh, well, it was, what are we, 12 years ago now? So it's like, oh, that's the reason why. It's like, no, it probably could have went a bit more. Like, I think in a lot of ways, and I was actually surprised, I'd say rewatching it again last night, was like how, to me, progressive, and I use progressive kind of very lightly, but like Chris Evans's character is quite progressive in it, and he's very open and like from the start been like, any guy who cares about your number, the amount of people that you slept with, like is not the person you want to be around. It's not somebody that you want to be with. You know, it's like, and it's the acknowledgement that like, it's okay for guys to have these really big numbers. Like, you know, I'm going to stop saying spoiler alert because we are just, if you're this far now, you have...
If you're this far in, babe.
But obviously it was surprised no one to know that we talked about Anna and Chris get together at the end and they have this kind of love declaration scene where, you know, she says to him, I think I love you 21, you know, so she's going to sleep with him. He's going to be her 21st. And he says, I love you to 300 and she stops him.
Mm.
So it's like he has slept with nearly probably 400 people and she's only at 21. And yeah, I think a lot of it though comes from herself. Which is the kind of thing that maybe annoys me the most about it is that like she's the one, like originally when she reads the article on the train and it says in the article that the national average of like the number of people that women have slept with or American women have slept with is like 10.5. And she thinks that's incredibly low. And it's the woman beside her on the train who's like, oh yeah, that seems very high. And she's like, no, low, that is low. And it's only when she compares herself to other people that she actually is like, oh, she gets really conscious of it then. Mm. Like she didn't think prior to this anything of the fact that she had slept with 19 people. Like that was normal. That's just what she had done. But it was then the other influences of this. It's this article telling her that that's wrong. It's the lady on the train telling her that's wrong. I say when she goes to that like bachelorette party, like that same evening with her sister and their friends, you know, she makes them play the game where everybody writes down the number of people they slept with. And then she comes across the friend who has 13. And originally, like, when she sees the 13, she's really, you can see it, she's really relieved because she's like, oh, thank God, like, it's not anybody else like me, you know, it's somebody else like me. And it's only when the rest, her sister and the rest of their friends start to shame her for that, for the 13, that she's like, oh, yeah. And then she joins in and she, like, starts calling her a whore and stuff. And then it flips back around on her a couple of minutes later when she tries to tear up the piece of paper. So she's obviously written 19 and she tries to tear the paper and say that it's only 9, but her sister finds it and puts it together. And they're like, oh, you're at 19. And she gets shamed for it then. And then she starts to become really conscious of it. Whereas I think if she had a maybe owned it a little bit more, it kind of would have been better. But for me, I just didn't like how internally she took it, in that she was fine with it until other people started to shame her for it.
And look, maybe that's more reflective of the actual true experience, because that is the thing, I'm sure, for most people now, where it's like, you know what I mean? Like, there are still people who would call someone any name under, or women, obviously, predominantly, any name under the sun, because they'd slept with however many people, or there's still a thing where it's like, oh my, he or she has been with everyone under the sun, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So in fairness, I suppose, I'm probably being a little bit too hard on it. That line where she tears up the paper and like then they cop that it's actually 19 and the other friend is like, oh my god, you've slept at 91 people. That is funny. I do have to give them that. I have to give them that.
But it isn't, look, it's not the most, I don't think rom-coms as a whole are the most progressive in the world, but like this is especially not, like, even as we did touch on it before, its treatment of like disgusting Donald, like it is kind of a good bit transphobic, you know, in the way that it handled it, and that she's only like interested in him, or she's now would only even consider going back to him because he's lost weight and he looks better now. And that's her, that's the crux of her whole like mission, is that like, well, he's lost weight and he looks good, so like my other exes must be great by now, like maybe you know, they did age well. And like on top of that is the kind of caveat that like, I think there's a lot of pressure, and maybe it's me reading too much into it, but there is the kind of pressure of her younger sister is getting married and she's the older one, and I think that's kind of having an effect on her. But also her younger sister is getting married to a guy who she dated in high school who was a dick, who she met again like 10 years later and was great. So that's the whole like crux of all of the relationships around her.
Played by tiny baby-faced Oliver Jackson Cohen, who people know as Luke from The Haunting of Hill House, which was very startling for me to watch. I was like, oh, baby Luke.
I think he has like two lines. I don't even think he has a line.
He's barely in it. I was like,
he says like, she makes a, Anna Faris makes like a speech and at the wedding.
He's like, don't worry, okay. She obviously gets drunk and like has a banger making the speech, and like Daisy's like, what? And he turns to Daisy and he's like, don't worry, babe. And then he says, obviously something at the end, he says like, I love you, or I do, and then something else.
And like, that's it. Their vows, their wedding scene is very cute though. Yeah. The vows are very sweet.
Very, very sweet. Very sweet. Who is her best ex? Obviously it was the best that she ended up with Colin, Chris Evans. Yeah. But if you had to pick someone else, who was the best ex?
It's tough because like, I think probably Tom Piper, the Anthony Mackie side. I know we've already said that he wanted her to be his beard, and I still just don't really understand why you turned that down. You could be first lady and you can have your little like affairs on the side.
I still think there could be love there, but just not that kind of love.
Yeah, like he clearly like was very, very taken with her, in terms of they seemed like two people that would get on really, really well. They could have a kind of good life together in a good companionship, like a good kind of friendship. And that's probably obviously different. She's never going to get that kind of intimacy from him. But I think he's a really, really nice guy and a really nice character. Like, I do think Dave Annabelle, or like Justin, I'm just going to call him Justin now because nobody is going to know, Justin from Brothers and Sisters, is like, he's incredibly attractive and he's obviously really rich and he has a thing, but he's also like,
God, he's so boring. And it
he's
just,
so boring.
Yeah. That whole thing when they're dancing at the wedding and he's like, oh, but, and again, I will say, as much as it like grates me, it does highlight that experience of like, You get with a guy or whatever, he thinks he's taking your virginity and he's like, he has that like kind of quote unquote ownership over you and like takes that pride in it. And then when she actually tells him, she's like, actually, I've slept with a load of people, not just you, and you weren't the first, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, like, it's just...
And it's like the assumption when she does tell him, also, that scene is really uncomfortable, isn't it? When like her, like, virginity loss scene. So they cut through scenes at different points of her in the past with these exes. And so she was supposed to lose her virginity to Justin from Brothers and Sisters in like the summer of high school, but then he went abroad. So she gets with the weird puppet master guy from like next door, played by Andy Samberg. And like, there is a scene of like when she loses her virginity and it's just so uncomfortable. But, you know, even when she does come around and say to him in the end, like, oh, you know, you weren't my first, and he just immediately assumes that it's only been him and this other person. You're like, no, she's a woman in her 30s. Of course she slept with other people.
Men.
But who do you think? Do you think, like, Tom is her best, as in the senator, Anthony Mackie? Simon is not bad. But Martin Freeman's character.
There's a part of me that's just like, she fucked that. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, we don't really even really know what went on. She was trying to do a Cockney British accent. That scene killed me, I have to say.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to get anyone to do like a fake accent, let it be Anna Faris.
Yeah.
And let it be not offensive, but like, the Brits are fine. Yeah,
she committed to it. But you're right. I think like, he was sound and he seemed really, really nice. And I'm sure like, when they meet up again and she runs into him, if she had just gone with being herself and did it in an American accent, they could have laughed and been like, yeah, I faked the British one when we were dating because I wanted to impress you. I think they could have been really good together then if she just had owned up. But no, she tried to commit it and then ended up doing this like Borat accent, which is very funny.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Yeah, there's so much of her that it's like she didn't show any of her actual self with any of these people. And that's probably also the root of the issue, as opposed to now some of them obviously were just tapped.
Yeah.
But then obviously then she ends up with Colin and it's like they can just be themselves together and he's going to play his weird punk, pop punk music at weddings. Yeah. Again, not sure what wedding he'd be booked at to do that, but whatever. And she's making her weird figurines.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I just...
Our great artist couple.
Yeah, great, truly. Yeah. Truly. What does a rom-com look like for you in 2023 then? Like, what's the best example and what's the worst kind of modern example, do you think?
Yeah. Ooh. I think to bring it back to the... I know you said you think like Netflix and stuff and the streamers are kind of the bit of the downside of the rom-com, where I actually think they've kind of helped it a lot.
Okay.
For a reason in that I think, as we've talked about, you know, in the early teens, kind of they weren't getting made, or they were kind of looked down upon in the early kind of teens.
Mm.
And I think like when you look at the history of the streamers or Netflix, because you know the way like Netflix started as just you'd go online, you'd pick a film and they'd send you the DVD.
And they'd post you the DVD. There are going to be children listening to this podcast and they're going to be like, sorry?
Sorry? Yeah, literally. Like they used to, you'd go online, you'd pick your movies, they'd send you the DVDs in the post and then you'd watch them.
And then they'd trust you to send them back, which is just like nuts to me again. Like
actually deranged. It reminds me of when I was younger, we lived across from a Chartbusters. It wasn't even Extravision, it was like Chartbusters. And I watched The Aristocats and The Little Vampire so much that my mom couldn't find the VHS, as it was at the time, anywhere. So she actually just bought it off them. Because I think she went over and told them that I had like broken the tape. And they were like, oh, well, we'll just charge you for it. And she was like, yeah, grandpa. So I just actually watched it that much. She was like, I can't keep going over it.
She was like, it's not worth it.
But anyway, so that was how Netflix had started. And then it kind of did its like foray into, you know, making its own original content. And I obviously like, people sometimes are like, why are Netflix series so short? And it, like, the long and short of it is they just didn't have the money when they were starting out. So like, they were making original, like, limited series because they couldn't do like an office, like The Office, or like a network comedy or a network drama that are like 22 episodes per season, because there just wasn't the budget for it. So they started doing the kind of limited series and then they picked off and got off well. And I think they do have a lot of good rom-coms in this kind of early to mid kind of teens, because rom-coms are so cheap to make. Mm-hmm. Like, as you say, like, the budget for What's Your Number is $20 million, like, which in comparison to like I don't even know how much it took to do like Avatar, but I think it's something in the kind of 400 million or something. Like insane amount of money. So it costs virtually nothing to make a rom-com. And when you don't have like a lot of money and you're trying to build your original content, like rom-coms are a good way to do it. And I think like one of the best rom-coms, like second favorite to What's Your Number for me, is Set It Up, which is on Netflix.
Okay, I haven't seen it, but I've heard a lot about it. It's
very good.
Okay.
It has something like 98% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is just like unheard of for a romantic comedy. It follows like Glenn Powell, who's in Top Gun Maverick, who I love more than anything.
Yeah.
So attractive.
Dreamboat.
So him and Zoe Deutsch are assistants who have really horrible, horrible bosses.
Okay.
And they spend too much time in their offices together. They're always like the people who are the last ones in their building. So they conspire together to set them up, to put them together, because they're convinced if they sleep together, they'll be fine. Or if they just have like regular sex, they'll be fine.
Highly strong.
They're just highly strong. You know, they just need to get the ride. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's understandable. So they try and set them up together to free up some time in their own lives. And then like Glenn Powell.
Get them off their back.
Yeah. Glenn Powell's character has a girlfriend who he's like trying to see more often. And Zoe Deutsch wants to be a writer, but she doesn't have time to write because the assistants are the kind of bosses are played really, really well by Taye Diggs and Lucy Liu, who are a really good combination on their own, but they're so dynamic together and they have so much chemistry. Like, that's a really great one. There was a romantic comedy that came out in the middle of lockdown which got criminally overlooked called The Broken Hearts Gallery. I think it's on...
I've never even heard of that.
Yeah, it's on... I think it's on Amazon. It was produced by Selena Gomez. And it is so incredible. It's like a modern When Harry Met Sally.
Okay.
So it's like follows this guy who's trying to set up a hotel and this girl who keeps getting dumped, and she keeps trinkets from all of her exes, so her room is just like full of things from past relationships, and he's trying to set up this hotel and he's having like money problems, so they put this like plan together for this Broken Hearts Gallery where she like brings all of the tokens of her exes and then puts out like a call on social media for everybody to come and like deposit their tokens of their ex relationship so they can like get them off their back and like kind of be free. It's kind of, you know, one of those like anger rooms where people go to like smash things. It's kind of like that, but you go and like put your items on display so people can like walk around and have a look.
And like little...
Yeah, like little notes or like teddy bears or things like that. And again, the chemistry between the two leads is incredible. The lead guy in it is Billy from Stranger Things.
Zachary Montgomery.
Yeah, and he is, again, in that so attractive, but he's really, really good. But I think like a lot of those, and then there's another one called, I think it's Plus One with Jack Quaid. And the Palm Springs, which is an Andy Samberg one.
Yeah, fuck, actually, I've been hard on the rom-com, like, Palm Springs.
Really, really good ones. And they're all kind of tied to streamers.
Mm.
And I think it's just because they don't, like, they're so cheap to make and they've kind of got nothing to lose, right? They'll make them and they'll put them online, and if you find them, you find them. Like, there's little or no marketing kind of goes into them, and it's not like they've already kind of recouped their investment. Like, you already have your subscription.
Yeah.
So they already have your money. Whether you watch it or not, it doesn't really make a difference to them. So because of that, I think the kind of pressure is off.
Mm.
So it doesn't really make a difference what the critics think. Like, you know, Netflix, Amazon, Apple, whoever, already have your money, so it doesn't really make it. If you watch it, you watch it. And I think that's where you find the most kind of hidden gems in the modern romantic comedy, is because they don't have the pressure of recouping their kind of their investment. They don't have the box office returns as being like one of the main drivers for any sort of kind of success. And I think like they have come out with some really, really good stuff recently enough. But in terms of like, what does like a rom-com look like in 2023? It's kind of really difficult because like, I don't know if we'll get into it or we can get into it now. It's like the recent examples that have just been so bad.
Mm. Like, then talk to me. Surely there's, you've given a lot of people some good recommendations.
Give us some good ones.
What should people be actively avoiding?
Like, the two most recent ones that spring to mind are the You People one with Jonah Hill and Lauren London and Eddie Murphy. Yeah. That's on Netflix. And then also another Netflix one, which might kind of just totally eradicate everything I've said in defense of the Netflix rom-com, but the Your Place or Mine with Reese Witherspoon and Ashton Kutcher, which has kind of had this whole thing with its marketing campaign, because they, like, did you see those press call photos where they just look like they actively hate each other?
Yeah, I talked about it on the podcast a couple weeks ago. They were like top of the flops because it was just like they couldn't
They hate each other.
I think it's bad that they even had to get, like, Mila was getting in on it being like, okay, guys, you clearly hate each other, like standing really far apart in red carpets. And then it was like, did they do it on purpose so that people would talk about it? And then I'm like, but that's still not good press for a movie that's all about, like, romance and connection. And
trying to peddle this idea that Ashton and Reese were these two really good friends and they've known each other for years, and then this came along and they've always wanted to work together, and so they just jumped at the chance. And I think that was the narrative they were trying to peddle. I just don't think they know each other. I just don't think they're that good 100%. Of friends at all. And they were trying to sell you that, and then those press photos came out and then you're like, no.
In all of the press interviews they did, it was like, again, like, glowing at, like, talking about their admiration for each other's work and stuff, but everything was so top level, so vague about the other person. There is no way. I'd say they've spoken maybe five times.
Yeah, if even. And even the whole premise of the movie is that they're best friends, or, like, I think they might have hooked up in college and then, but they've just...
And they decided to house swap.
Yeah, they literally house swap. It's like kind of like The Holiday. He lives in LA and she lives in New York. Or no, it's opposite way around. Sorry, she lives in LA and he lives in New York, and then they swap and she goes to New York and she meets Jesse Williams, and she has this kind of... Jesse Williams is who is Jackson from Grey's Anatomy. Yeah.
Okay, maybe I will watch. Great eyes.
So they have this, like, dalliance together, and that makes, like, Ashton Kutcher realize that maybe, you know, it should have been her all along. But they spend the vast majority of the movie apart. So, like, we talked about kind of charisma being such an integral part of it, but it's like they don't even have a lot of screen time together. So that's how they sell it, and that's how they get away with it. It's like they don't have to interact for the majority of the movie.
Okay, that's... Oh my God. Because, look, I'm not sitting here being like, you have to be licking each other up and down for me to believe it. Like, I think...
Yeah.
But if you even compare to, like, what was that movie... Jessica Chastain and Oscar Isaac were in, and they were
Scenes from a Marriage.
Scenes from a Marriage. Yeah. And that's all, that's like about a dissolution of a relationship, but like the red carpet. And like, so he's like stroking her arm and like looking at her. It's like, at least, okay, there's obviously drumming up a level of intrigue here, being like, I'm going to watch. But at the same time, it's like, okay, you're set, like, I think you do need to go heavy on the romance. That's why we love the old school ones. That's why, like, we fell so hard for, like, When Harry Met Sally and, like, Sleepless in Seattle and You've Got Mail, because it's like, you could feel it. And it wasn't necessarily in a very, like, they're ripping each other's clothes off and we're seeing them go at it on a bed. But it's like, they're in love.
They're in love, you know what
I
mean?
Like, you see, it's why I feel like I bring everything back to Love Island, and I don't mean to, but, like, why I have issues with when some people, or when some couples get to the final and some don't. I need to believe on even, like, the minutest level that they are in love, that there is that someone has fallen in love. You know what I mean? Like, I love the entertainment. I love the showman's couples as well.
Yeah.
But there's something inherently dissatisfying about seeing two people, and I can't see it. Yeah. I don't believe it. I don't buy it.
You really have to, like, buy into it. And to go, like, completely off course here, but it's just the thing I think about the most, is, like, have you watched Bridgerton? Have you watched the, like, first two series?
I watched the first season, but I actually haven't watched the second season.
Well, you need to watch the second season.
So that's, like, Simone Ashley, and it's, like, way more deliberately slow burn.
Deliberately, like,
more catered to, like, female gaze. Yeah, because the first series, I'll never forget watching that, like, Christmas during the pandemic, being like, will I watch this with my family? And then they're like shagging on the stairs, or he's like giving her a lick out, like, up against a library. And it's like, I can only stay in my house. Like, if I leave, the COVID is going to get me, and I have to stay here and look at my mom and be like, well, that was great, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was really good.
Jesus.
But for me, it's what made the second season so successful, is that, like, there wasn't that heaviness on sex, but, like, when I was watching this, like, every time they would kind of brush hands or, like, twirl past each other on the dance floor, my stomach was in knots with the butterflies, and I was like, this is it, this is the chemistry, this is the charisma, this is the romance. Like, I just say, I don't need them to, like, literally tear each other's clothes off. I know they want, like, deep down I know they want to do that, but they just can't. And that's what makes it all the more better, is that it doesn't... I think there's sometimes people are like, oh, well, they're too... The rom-coms, like, are too cheesy, or they don't kind of... They're, you know, they're too, like, PG or whatever. It leads up to this kiss and that's it. And then you don't see anything else of the relationship, or you don't see that desire. But I don't think you need that. Like, I don't think you need explicit sex for a rom-com to be good. I think you just need to have, at the centre of it, just two characters that you can, as you say, in the smallest sense, have a belief that they could be together. And like, you've had the kind of, people have said it with like the mismatched couples before. Do you know, in terms of like, when Harry Met Sally is a good example, with like Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan. It's like, would Billy Crystal ever be able to call Meg Ryan?
I won't have a bad word said about Billy Crystal.
I'll just say
that right now. I know that's not what you're inferring, but if anyone's listening to this and thinking they want to start an argument with me about Billy Crystal, you won't.
Billy Crystal, babe. In that white jumper. And the autumn vibes in New York. So great. But we saw it then, right, with the Judd Apatow era.
Yes.
I'm using quotation marks. I know this is an audio platform, but you know what I mean. Mm. The Judd Apatow era, which are like these stoner boys, or it's, you know, like Seth Rogen being able to pull Katherine Heigl, which you're like, is that ever going to happen? I don't know. It's like, again, it's these people kind of looking at a settling, or these like mismatched couples that you never see like get together. Like, if they have in any sort of chemistry, it doesn't make a difference whether you think plausibly would they be able to get together, or if this and conventionally might they get together. You're like, if they have the tiniest bit of charisma and chemistry together, you're going to believe it.
Yeah.
And that's all it kind of takes.
About suspending that that disbelief again. Yeah. You mentioned You People there, which actually was kind of the subject of this piece in The New Yorker recently.
Yeah.
With three critics basically talking about, and kind of touching on what we've been talking about this evening, about where the rom-com lies in 2023 and whether we're at a crisis point for it, because the end of You People, spoilers, it's not really a spoiler, but it's like essentially the final scene. They kiss, Lauren London and Jonah Hill.
Yeah.
But apparently, allegedly, someone who was on the set or in the movie revealed on a podcast that that scene was actually CGI'd. Because I think Jonah Hill had pulled out, or like wasn't committing to things towards the end because of his mental health. I think there could be another reason. I'm not 100% sure. But anyway, it is alleged that that was CGI. So they were kind of talking about then, and just talking about the things we're talking about here. Yeah. Like, you know, are things too heavy on the com, too heavy on the rom? Like, where's the balance? Are we not believing the connection? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I'll link it in the show notes for anyone who wants to read it, because it's very interesting. But do you think rom-coms are at a crisis point again? Like, the same crisis point as they were maybe coming out of the aughts into the teens? Or are we like, I think you have a positive outlook on it, but...
I do have a positive kind of outlook on the state of the rom-com. I think sometimes, like, when you try to overburden it, is when I think it fails. And I think like You People is trying to do too much with this very small kind of runtime.
Okay.
In that, like, they kind of highlight it in that New Yorker article where, you know, they're talking about it really loses the rom aspect of it, and that you see them kind of meet and then it jumps to 6 months later. And then the center of the action is like revolved around these two families from different cultures meeting and clashing. And it not in the kind of fun My Big Fat Greek Wedding way, where like everybody, you know, it's like, how are they going to get on? And then of course they get along because they come together for like the betterment of the couple. You know, or whatever they, you know, you have that, the conflict when you have those kind of cultural clash or family clash, the conflict of your rom-com is you put all the family together and then you have your central couple being like, well, I can't do this if our families aren't going to get along. And that's when they break up. And then, you know, the families realize, oh, well, they actually really are meant for each other. And they all come back together in the end. But I think the issue with You People, the commentary I've seen is like they focus too much on the supporting players, in that like it was very heavy for like Eddie Murphy, who's, you know, plays the dad, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who's Jonah Hill's mom. And it kind of leaned really heavily into the comedy side as opposed to the romance. And I think it's like, it's difficult. Like, comedy is so subjective. So like things that you find funny, I might not find funny, and vice versa. So like, it can be hard to kind of strike that balance. But when you're like doing a rom-com where you focus instead on the like conflict or the kind of issues of the people surrounding the couple as opposed to the couple itself, like, it's just not gonna work well. It's like,
you're not gonna want to root for them, because it's like, I am focusing on all of these other people, like, why should I care about these two?
Yeah. And a lot that, and another one of the recent rom-com that was kind of touched on in that article is Bros, which I saw when I was over in New York. And it was, I think it would have been it's a very different experience having seen it with an American crowd, because there was a lot of things that I didn't get that my friends did.
Okay.
But like, for people who aren't aware, Bros is a gay romantic comedy with Billy Eichner, who wrote it and stars in it. And he cast this incredibly attractive man whose name has just escaped me now to play his kind of romantic lead opposite him. And they're one of those kind of couples who you wouldn't put them together. but it leans really heavily into this, like, you wouldn't put them together because of, like, Billy Eichner's own insecurities, not as opposed to that they're just not compatible. Mm. Who is it?
Luke McFarlane.
Yeah, yeah, he was very handsome.
He's a very handsome, very, very handsome man. But similar to you people, it leaned too heavily into this, like, social commentary idea.
Was that also kind of a little bit Billy's fault for being like, this is the first gay... I'm going to take that tone back because that's a bit rude, right? But the way he was positioning it was like, this is the first like gay rom-com ever, and if you're not supporting it, like, you're a bad person. And like, yeah. And it's like, you know, like, we never get this representation on screen, which, like...
And that is an example that leaned very heavily into the explicit sex. It wasn't like overly... Explicit.
Yeah, I think in that regard, it's like, okay, yes, we don't really generally see that on screen, and it's like good to see that on screen, and it's important that that's seen on screen. But it's also not like, I don't know, there have been movies that paved the way before that, and I think to not acknowledge that is a bit. Oh.
Yeah, and as you said, the way that kind of Billy Eichner then came out afterward and kind of went on the attack in terms of, like, it was like the marketing's problem. It was, you know, the gay community's problem for not going out to support. It was the straight community's fault for not going out and being better allies. And it was just like, well, no, at the crux of it, you tried to do too much with too little. And there wasn't as much of a focus for me on the central couple. There was a lot of focus on, like, their families and their kind of friends around them, and also a lot of focus on, like, Billy Eichner's character works for, like, a fictional kind of gay lesbian museum in New York that they're trying to get up and running, and that's the kind of main source of the calm, and leans very heavily into the calm, where it kind of loses that romance aspect. Mm-hmm. And you're like, no, you just tried to do too much too little. If you hadn't have tried to, like, go really heavily with this kind of bringing out so much kind of gay and lesbian issues into the rom-com, you're like, it would have been fine. It, like, all you want is to just see two men fall in love, and that's fine. There should be, like, a place for that. But, like, you were, like, so heavily getting into other things that it just distracted from, like, the rom-com. And I think it's a hard balance to strike between the romance and the comedy. But there's also, like, how much of it is, like, as we talked about earlier with the, when it was in the recession, you don't want to go to the cinema to see people, like, spend a lot of money. Like, where we're at kind of now, even, like, in Ireland and abroad, is, like, you have people who are living at home for longer. And, like, do you want to see a romantic comedy about a girl who, like, struggles to fucking sleep with someone because, like, she lives in the room above her mom? Like, no. Like, it's like, what do you want to see or what you don't want to see? There was a good point in that New Yorker article where they talk about, like, When Harry Met Sally, and the crux of the romantic comedy, like, in the 80s, was, like, these were people who were in their early 20s for the most part, but they were, like, adults, and it was either you never leave your small hometown and you buy a house in your small hometown, or you move to New York and you never talk to your family again. And it was kind of one or the other, whereas our kind of generation, they were kind of, like, bridging that gap where we're at home for so much longer. That's, like, how do you depict that, and how do you, like, convince people that this is a kind of representative, an actual rom-com that represents us and, like, where we are at now in our life? Because, like, I don't want to go and see that rom-com of, like, a girl who's, like, still living at home and, like, is struggling with XYZ.
It's generally not for, like, the rental crisis, generally not very romantic, I
not
will
the
say.
Sexiest thing, you know, you're going to have to navigate on screen. But it's like, how do you bridge that gap of being totally unbelievable, that, like, no, like, shying away from kind of issues of today or whatever, and being wholly unbelievable, or leaning into the issues of today and trying to bring that into your movie, but then kind of losing the rom and the gap, and then like ending up with a movie that just doesn't work well, and characters that don't have any chemistry. There was a good point people in the critics in the New Yorker article made, was like, in You People, the best chemistry is with the parents. It's with Eddie Murphy and Nia Long and Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and I think it's David Duchovny is Jonah Hill's dad.
Yeah.
Like, that's where the romance comes from. It's like their chemistry, not between, like, Lauren London and Jonah Hill.
Yeah. Another good one recent. I loved The Lost City. Did you see The Lost City?
I loved
Just
The
kind
Lost
of also
City.
Like, you could probably position that as, like, an action, like, adventure movie, but.
But then again,
it.
Like, to bring it all back to that, like, Channing Tatum and Sandra Bullock have such good chemistry.
Such good chemistry.
That, like, they're so believable on screen. And it translates into even their press tours, where you can tell that they just get on so well.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. One thing that shook me to my core when I figured this out about this movie, bring it back to What's Your Number?
Yeah.
The director.
Oh my God, I wrote this down for you.
Mark So Mark Mylod is the director. He's done a lot of TV, British. This only ended up being like his third movie, maybe. Yeah.
And since like he most recently will have done The Menu. If people have seen the Nicholas Hoult, Anya Taylor-Joy.
I haven't... Okay,
very different tonally.
At the time of recording this, I haven't watched it. I've heard lots of things about it. I'm going to watch it and like the out of the episode, I'll talk about The Menu because as you said, extremely different tonally, like horror comedy. But like Mark Mylod has worked on, to name but a few, Succession.
Yeah.
He did one of the best episodes of Succession in season two. Shameless. His other feature films are... Ali G in the House, which is incredible. The Big White, which I can't remember. But in other stuff he's done, The Royal Family, Cold Feet, It's Reeves and Mortimer. He did the pilot episode for The Affair. He's done episodes of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Like, it's just... Because you know when you're doing research for this and you go onto a Wikipedia page and I always look at the writer, the director, to see if there are any funny links. And this is the first time where I was like, what the fuck? I was like, this is all of my interests. Like,
combined,
just intersecting at once. Yeah. It's just, and he did an interview with Fanny Fair, which I linked below as well, kind of talking about, it was more about The Menu and like, why he wanted to do it and stuff, and his journey to The Menu, about the fact that like the previous movies, What's Your Number, Ali G in the House and The Big White, they kind of, he wasn't fully happy with them, and like The Menu he was like really massively dedicated to. But even when he did that episode of Succession in season two, it's the one where they're trying to get the merger and it's that dinner party episode. Like Steven Spielberg wrote him a letter after, being like, that was class, like, you did, I'm paraphrasing, what was essentially like, that incredible television, you're so good, blah blah blah. And then to find out he did What's Your Number, I'm like, that's range. That's range.
Literally, like, line one, I have like, What's Your Number, 2011, director Mark Mylod, brackets, Succession, 13 episodes, must talk about with Fionnuala. Like, I was like, she is going to love this. But incredibly, like, breakneck speed, change of pace there. Like, with Shameless and Succession.
Ali G in the house! In the house!
In the house!
Like, I wonder when you do the podcast. I might see if I can get an email from him. I'd love to chat to him. I would find that fascinating. Robin, what's your elevator pitch for What's Your Number? And why do you think it flopped? And why do you think people should reevaluate that and just embrace it in their hearts as you have?
I think everybody should give it a go. And I will say, I can't give a more glowing review than to tell you that everybody that I have sent to watch this has loved it. Like, anytime anybody comes to me, like, people do come to me a lot for movie recommendations, or is this good, is that good, and they don't know what to watch, and I'm like, go watch What's Your Number. It's on Disney Plus. It was on Netflix for a while, but I think it kind of switched over when like Disney got Fox and they got all the Fox Searchlight things,
all the Foxy stuff,
all the Foxy things over on Disney Plus now. But everyone that I have sent to watch this has absolutely loved it. And I think it's one of those, like, it's such, as I say, it's my all-time favourite film, even ashamedly so. But it's such a comfort film for me. Like, when it's a rainy day, I pop it on. Like, I had a hard day in work yesterday, and like rewatching this, I was like, this is joy. This is so good. Like, the chemistry is so good. It is really, really funny. And I think it's just like one of those, it's light. It's two actors that you know and that you can get behind. In a kind of, it's simple enough in its premise. It doesn't ask a lot of you. You can kind of shut your brain off and kind of get lost in it. And in the end of it, like, when they do get together, like, the first time I watched this, I cried. Now, I don't know what kind of position, like, my granny always says about me that my bladder is too close to my eyes, because between like movies and like TV commercials and stuff, I will cry at all the time.
Yeah.
But like, when it got to that thing in the end, like, she says to him, I'm happiest when I'm myself and I'm myself and I with you. Tears, absolute, like, tears streaming down my face. So I think, yeah, if you want a nice, like, lighthearted watch, something that you can just shut your brain off, it's like kind of a warm comfort blanket of a film. You do have to, like, as we say, a little bit problematic looking back on it 12 years down the line. You might have to suspend
everything.
Your deep
is.
A little
I feel
bit.
Bad when I ask people and they come on and they're like, yeah, some of it hasn't aged well. I'm like, I know, it's fine. I know, it's fine.
Some of the best movies, like, really haven't. But, you know, it's being able to look back at it. But even like romantic comedies, like, oh God, try and watch a John Hughes film in like 2023. And it's just not a good experience.
It's not happening, babes.
It's not happening. But yeah, it's, you know, suspend your disbelief. It's great. It's really, really enjoyable.
And I did enjoy it. I did enjoy it.
It's like, it's only, I think it's just under an hour and 20.
Hour 47?
An hour 40, yeah.
A great
147,
movie
I think. So, like, great length. Only 107 minutes.
I love it.
really great.
Robin, it's been a pleasure. Where can people find out more about you?
Yes. So I am on Instagram as Reviews by Robin. That's me. I will do kind of film and TV reviews. And now that we are in award season, lots of awards commentary. I will be staying up to watch the Oscars live and be posting stories of them. I always, like, I used to do it on my close friend's story and would say to my friends, you know, preemptively the day of the Oscars, be like, I'm really sorry, you're going to wake up to about 400 videos of me like screaming or crying or like raging at a result. So now I just do it on an entirely different Instagram for people to go and watch. But yeah, I do the Oscars commentary on Reviews by Robin and I do movie reviews, and I am on TikTok as Little Miss Murphy, where I'll just talk about a lot of kind of different movie and TV stuff or do topical TikToks to funny sounds. I'm on my Last of Us trend now.
Oh yes. Aren't we all?
Aren't we all?
Pedro Pascal.
Oh, Pedro Pascal.
I can't talk about it. We'll be here all night.
No, we'll be here all day.
Robin, thank you so much. I will leave all your links in the show notes. Yes. I can't wait to talk rom-coms again very soon.
Yes, I have so many more ideas for flops we can get back on.
Hit me. We're not short of material.
We're not short of material. I was even thinking about, like, earlier talking about, you know, with Chris Evans and how I felt sometimes maybe it's a bit fatigued. Mm-hmm. I had felt that with Miles Teller until Top Gun came out, and now I'm like back on the Teller train. And then even thinking about this, I was like, God, his Fantastic Four would be a great flop to talk about.
That is, I think my sister wanted to do that flop.
Oh, you should have her undo it. It's really good.
She's had a lot of ideas for flops, but then Shinna Baby, who I am obsessed with, but it has been taking up a lot of her time. Whenever she's like self-sufficient, we'll sit down and record.
Yes.
Anyway, love you, Cara. Love you, Niamh. Robin, thank you so much for joining me on Flop Culture.
Thank you for having me.
A huge thank you to Robin again for joining me. I will leave all of her links below. And if you want to watch What's Your Number, you can stream it now on Disney Plus. Before I let you go, let's talk Top of the Flops.
You're a flop.
Top of the Flops this week is King Charles. Maybe perpetually floppy, but certainly this week, because on May 6th, he is being coronated. He will be crowned. He will be officially made king alongside his wife, Lady Camilla. She will become queen. But they're having a little bit of difficulty booking entertainment. Nobody wants to play at the poor lad's party. Adele said no, declined for unspecified reasons. She's potentially getting married. That's the word on the street at the minute. But I'd say she also just didn't want to do it, to be honest. Ed Sheeran is going to be in Texas. So he said no, he can't do it. Those two were like the pair that he was most keen on having, King Charles. A few other people he had in the list, Harry Styles, which would get potentially very confusing if you had another Harry around, I would say. So not sure on the logic there. Maybe he loves the new album, probably. Elton John, which, flop behaviour even asking that man in the first place. Whose big idea was it to invite Elton John? Who did that phone call? What did that sound like? Hi, how are you? Oh my God, it's been so... How are you? How's David? And the kids? Come here, the song with Dua. Wow, you've done it again. You have done it again. So listen, right? I know he was married to Anna, and you know, like the unsavouriness of that. I know. Look, not great, but he's got a big gaff coming up. He wants you to come. All the drinks free. I've made punch. It's going to be good. No? Hello? Hello? No, he hung up. That's how I imagine that call went. The Spice Girls, who we heard a lot about in Prince Harry's memoir, they said no. I think they were trying really hard to get the Spice Girls to do it, because obviously that means a reunion. People love a Spice Girls reunion. However itty bitty it is, they also thought it might be a way of luring Prince Harry into attending. Apparently he's not attending unless he gets an apology. It's a bit embarrassing, like, and the tragedy of it all is kind of incredible. That said, I do have some suggestions for other acts. He could book Abby Lisa. I'm Abby, she's Lisa. Together we are Abby Lisa. I think they might be free. I'm not sure. Christopher Maloney. I feel like he'd be quite available. That French bulldog that sounds like Lady Gaga that goes viral like every 6 months.
would go down a treat. And to be honest, you could probably just put the dog behind a curtain and be like, oh my God, Lady Gaga came, woo! Say nothing. The guy who does the YMAX song, actually, no, sorry, he's touring. He's touring. He can't do it. But then I'm wondering, is it like, he'd be lucky now if he'd get Crystal Swing at this point. Do you know what I mean? Maybe that's an insult to Crystal Swing. I don't think Crystal Swing would do it. But yeah, flop behaviour. Flop. That's what you get when you flop. That's that Paramore song, isn't it? That's what you get when you flop. No one wants to play at your party. It's his party. He'll cry if he wants to. Soz, King Charles, do better. Do better. Thank you so much for listening, as always. Or if it's your first time, you're so welcome. I hope you come back. We are flapculture_pod on Instagram and TikTok. You can get in touch, as always, at helloflapculture@gmail.com. If you have a suggestion for any episode, let me know. I'm always taking them. Rate the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts to get a personalized bop or flop recommendation from me. You can also leave a 5-star review on Spotify. It helps people find the show, and it's hugely appreciated by me. This podcast has been edited by Adam Shannon. Artwork, as always, by Brian Lambert. I will talk to you all next week. Take care of yourselves. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.